Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Hello, Negotiations Ninja listeners. Welcome to this incredible episode where we interview Joe Parento. He's a leading expert on sales performance, and in the last 5 years, he's sold more than $1 billion in revenue. That number should get your attention. Today, he's a sales leader at Microsoft. He's a trendsetter, a dynamic speaker, a visionary, and a deep thinker. And we talk all about some secrets around negotiation where people blow it today. So where are the most common areas where people blow their negotiations? We also talk about the number one thing that's wrong with salespeople today and how to build and keep momentum in the sales cycle. Joe is also an author of the book Billion Dollar Sales Secrets, which is fantastic. I highly recommend that you look at that and pick it up. Enjoy this great episode with Joe Parento. Joe, how are you?
Hey, great to see you, Mark. Happy day. So I'm really doing well today.
It is a happy day. It is a fantastic day. I've been waiting for this for quite some time. I know you and I have been trying to figure out dates for a while and we figured it out. So I'm thankful. I'm grateful that we're here today and we're here to talk about what you've got going on and get some really cool insight and advice from you. But before we get into the conversation, maybe you could tell the listeners a bit about who you are and what you do.
No, absolutely. Thank you for that. And I'm really excited to connect with your listeners today. So my name is Joe Parento. I'm a sales director. I currently work at Microsoft. And I also wrote a book on sales. It's something that's been an ambition for me. Something unique about me is I've been certified in sales methodologies to the nth degree. I think I have like 16 or 18 sales certifications. I've learned in sales to be very curious. And I also like to learn. So when I wrote a book on selling, it was kind of filling in the gaps of all the things that I had never seen talked about in sales training, in books that I've read. So it's also been beneficial to me. And it's really a little bit more than just my journey in sales. I've been around some excellent sellers. So people will read some things that I've learned and seen in 30 years of selling to more than 30,000 customers. And you know, my billion-dollar journey myself, I sold $1 billion as an individual contributor in 5 years, which, do the math, and you're talking about quotas that are 250 to 400 million annually.
Amazing, man. Well done. And that's something to be proud of, and it's something that's a massive accomplishment. Getting those kind of quotas achieved are insane, first of all, so well done for that. But along the way, you've built this skill set, and you've now written this book. And now you got some lessons that you'd like to share. And so one of the questions I want to ask you, and you talk about this, is people don't know when they're going to blow it in a lot of the negotiations they're going into. And there are some smart negotiation secrets that you've learned throughout your career where you've realized, hey, there are some areas where you think you're getting feedback from a customer or from someone that you're negotiating with where you're like, hey, this is going really well. But what you don't realize is that you're probably blowing it along the way. So maybe I'll ask the broad open-ended question is, where do people blow it where they don't realize they're actually blowing it?
Yeah, and I see this, you know, I'm practicing my sales game every day. And I think we all do. There are deals that you get engaged in if everyone's honest with themselves, where you analyze it and you're like, oh, that wasn't putting my best foot forward. I kind of blew it there. But one thing I've noticed that's a common thread through these tales of woe is that people blow it because we're all kind of self-absorbed. We approach negotiation thinking about what is it that I want? What is it that I can win? And it's a mindset shift. I actually saw this week. So if you're a customer of mine and you're tuning in and you're like, uh-oh, is he talking about me? Just know that I probably have about, you know, 8 to 10 customer meetings a day. So that'll help round out the suspects. But when customers blow it, I've seen it both ways. They just think about themselves and what they want to achieve. And when customers don't blow it, You know, I've had some really savvy customers who go and research everyone that they're going to be negotiating with, and they learn about me. And I had one customer, it was about 6 months ago, actually started building bridges, went to my LinkedIn, did some research about me, found out where we had common connections, called those connections, made them call me. And guess what? They probably got a much better deal because they were concerned about connecting with the people, learning who the people were. And sellers do this as well. If you go into a negotiation without knowing and learning about your customer, without going to visit their website or looking at their LinkedIn, you know, I laugh because there's tons of people who try selling me financial services, you know, franchises, and they never, ever go to my LinkedIn to see that I wrote a book on selling or to ask me a question about, you know, hey, you've been in sales for a while. You know, what are you thinking about this? So it's know your customer, know what they're about. Don't be so self-focused. And that's where I see everyone blowing it these days, both on customers and seller side, is that they don't approach things with enough curiosity about who they're talking to and what they're trying to achieve.
When we think about curiosity, I find that for a lot of people that have quotas, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, the pressure of the quota seems to overcome them in a way, right? Where they're like, oh, I got to sell. But counterintuitively, it's the release of that pressure to get curious that often drives most of your sales, I find, at least in my experience, when you can almost separate yourself from the outcome and get curious about the other person's business and about whether or not you can even help them. And so understanding that comes through in a lot of how you talk to a customer, right? There's not as much pressure. And so the customer feels that way. They're like, oh, okay, this person's actually genuinely curious and genuinely trying to figure out whether or not there's a fit. And they don't feel as though they're being sold to in many of those cases. Have you found the same thing?
Absolutely. That's such a wise and astute observation. It makes me laugh because I remember somebody who was on a team with me, and he would go and he would look, especially when it got close to the end of the quarter, the end of the year. He's looking at his number and he's stressing about his quota. He's wondering where the revenue is going to come. And if you're in this position and you're on a calendar year, I'll remind you, you only have about 64 selling days left in this 2021. So that's my sales manager hat thrown on there. But people, when they stress about these things, they lose sight of the customer. And I've had some really big quotas and some really big targets. The one thing that I found is if you have $1 million quota versus $100 million quota versus a $500 million quota, it's the same. It's a level of abstraction, a level of, you know, what's behind that are customers. There's customer growth patterns and products and things like that. The better you connect with those customers and you lose sight of, hey, my metrics really aren't what's important here. What's important is me establishing a relationship with you. And in my book, you know, I kind of give rapport building tips that are grounded in neuroscience. And it's amazing when you read and learn about what some of these things are. Every seller, no matter what level you're at, likes to view themselves as great. But the one thing that salespeople need to be great at is learning and being curious and having empathy, because that will truly keep the engine firing on all cylinders. When you are focused on other people, learning how to channel your curiosity toward achieving their objectives, you'll be really successful. It sounds simple, but that's a lifetime journey of a lot of different skills built into one. I tell people, you know, being a kind of approaching excellence in sales is like playing chess on six different boards upside down.
You talk about the six different people in a negotiation. I think a lot of people miss this a lot in negotiations, not necessarily the number, but the fact that there's more than one other person on the other side. They think that they're negotiating with one person at the table. And I see this a lot in people who are new to enterprise sales and enterprise relationships. They feel as though negotiations sort of like this back and forth between you and the counterparty, when in fact there's multiple people that you're negotiating with throughout the entire relationship. Who are these six different people, and why is it so important to be able to negotiate not only with the person who you mainly communicate with, but with all these other people as well?
One of the things that grounded me in negotiation that was super helpful was my undergraduate degree is in something called speech communication. And speech communication is the study of human communication. We spent an entire year just on interpersonal communication. You know, what happens when one person meets another? tremendously amazing what the research says. And the six people in a negotiation is based upon some of that research. It's not new. There's a pioneer in the area. His name's, you know, Dr. Dean Barnland. You know, he's groundbreaking, you know, research in human communication. But the six people are people that most of us often overlook. And it's a really good framework that I like to think about whenever I'm approaching a negotiation. And they are, how do I view myself? How do I view the other person? How do I think the other views me? How do I think the other views themselves? How the other person views me? And how the other person believes that I view them. So those are the six people in a negotiation. And obviously you can compound this, because if there's three, four, six people in a negotiation, suddenly you've got a room full of people to think about. And I've benefited, you know, if anyone who's studied NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, there's a really cool trick that you can do called perceptual positions. And it's kind of related to these six people, just on a more easy to comprehend scale. And it's in every situation, if you change your physical position to think about the other person, it actually helps you be a little bit more empathetic. But this is one of these things that I go through when I'm approaching negotiation, is think about these six people. And it's like, we all got number one down, right? You know, how we view ourselves, that's easy peasy. How we view the other person, that's usually pretty easy. But to really think about how the other views me, am I coming off as being overly salesy, not having enough value to deliver? And then how do they view themselves? How do we perceive that they view themselves? Do we understand that they just took out a second on their mortgage? They really need to get this bonus at work. They really need to land this deal as much as you need to land this deal. And then how this other person believes that we view them. Are they coming into this thinking that we view them as a vendor, you know, as a, what's the relationship between us? Is it one of mutual respect and equity? So these are very deep things. It sounds like it's simple. And if you're listening and contemplating this, you're like, oh yeah, that sounds easy. Putting it in action is a whole nother thing. And I give some tips on how to not only identify these six people, but what you can do tactically to bear, and may the odds be forever in your favor. What is that? Hunger Games, you know, make the odds forever in your favor, but it's done through an empathetic way of kind of identifying this landscape.
One thing that you said there strikes me as very interesting, the NLP thing, where you said you change your physical position in relation to the person. What do you mean by that?
So perceptual positions is something that I do a lot. And what I mean by this is, like, if you're trying to adapt or adopt another person's thinking, I have little X's in my room where I like to do my thinking. And I'll go over and I'll stand here and I'll actually pretend what it's like to be that person, what it's like to walk into their company. If I was in their role, what would my life be like? And then I'll look back at the position that I was coming from to kind of perceive who I am. And I'll develop that actual physical positioning to start thinking a little bit more empathetically. And what happens in your brain when you physically move and change position, you're putting yourself in a different mindset. And believe it or not, chemically, you know, the neuroscience says your body changes, your synapses fire differently, different parts of your brain are activated. It's absolutely amazing what happens when you physically will get up out of your chair, wherever you're standing, wherever your workplace is, and just move over here. Trust me, it's not just for sales either. It works great if you're trying to get through issues with teenagers, you're trying to talk to them about something. I find with my daughters, I'll just move in their room when I'm talking to them to somewhere else and maybe sit down, take a deep breath, try and think about what they're saying and develop a new position and a new way of thinking. So it really does help.
This is fascinating to me. You physically put X's in your office where you will move to those X's on the floor, almost like acting in a way, like acting actors have spots right. That they would move to, so that you can assume the mindset of the person that you're speaking to.
Correct. And I'll do it in advance of that meeting to think about it. When I'm giving speeches, I do this as well. When I'm practicing, I will go to a certain spot that I revere. And it's interesting because the more speaking that I've done, let's say I'm going to a venue and I've got tables and desks laid out and it's facing east, I will develop my position so that I'm facing east when I'm practicing. I will do that so I can really be as close to what that actual thing is. And I've even printed off pictures of what that environment will look like and put it on my wall. So then I'm practicing and I'm talking, I'm connecting with the audience that is imaginary. at this point, and I'll do it until I feel completely comfortable. So when I see the actual thing, it's simulation, and it probably comes from my background of, you know, I spent time in the military and I took pilot training and I got my pilot's license. And so there you do a lot of training on the ground, flying before you ever get in the plane. When you're there, it doesn't scare the Jesus out of you. You're like, okay, I get it. I'm up here 10,000 feet above the planet and I'm flying an airplane. How cool is this? And I can see exactly where I'm going to land because I've flown it on Flight Simulator a million times.
You've visualized it over and over and over again so that when it happens, it feels more natural.
And athletes do this. You think about, you know, I've had the privilege of meeting and hearing about others who work with pro athletes, and they say the same thing. They're like, Michael Jordan will go out there and shoot a whole bunch of baskets before any of his other teammates would show up. And arguably, probably one of the best basketball players that ever lived, but never stopped believing that he was above any of that. And the need to practice. And again, this goes back to where I see salespeople blow it. Are you a Michael Jordan personality and always believe that your best day is in front of you and you're going to go out there and do the time and practice? Many salespeople and listeners, if you're honest with yourself, when was the last book that you read to sharpen your saw and get better on negotiation or selling or anything? And if it was over a month ago, there's somebody out there who you'll meet like me, who is reading one or two books a week and listening to podcasts, doing a lot of time investing in myself to make myself better. And it's a never-ending journey. But that's what the great people do. Venus Williams and Serena, they're out there sharpening their crafts. World-class skiers will often visualize the course before they ever go down it. And you'll see them, you know, Peekaboo Street, she'd be like this. She'd be like, wow, boom, boom. And for those of you listening, you can't see, I'm just kind of in a full tuck going down the mountain as if I were Peekaboo Street. But we all know that's not true.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. So this is what I find amazing. When you talk to people at the top of their game, you talk to them about how they got there and they say the same things you're saying, whatever discipline they're in, doesn't really matter. They say, no, this is what I do. And this is what I still do to make sure that I stay at that level and not only stay at that level, but get to the next level. And I think for a lot of people, they have a difficult time because they may be at the bottom, right? And they're trying to work their way up. They have a difficult time wrapping their heads around people who've made it to that level, who maintain and build up from that level of like, how do you keep going? You just keep doing the things that got you there and you keep layering on all of these skills. So when you're reading your two books a week, you're not just reading them. You're thinking to yourself, what from this can I implement to what I'm doing to make myself better? And so you're constantly layering on all of these different skill sets over the course of that time. And that's what took you from whatever sales level you were at to $1 billion in sales over 5 years. It requires that level of dedication. It requires that level of focus. And when you say to people, I read two books a week on whatever it might be, or listen to two audiobooks a week or whatever it is, for a lot of people, it's hard for them to wrap their heads around that. And even for me, listening to it sitting here right now, that's what I did over the course of the last 5 years to develop my negotiation ability. But even thinking about it, you're like, wow, that's a lot, right? Trying to think of it from someone else's perspective, but that's what's required to be able to do it. So for those people that are listening in thinking, whoa, hang on, that's a lot.
Right.
What would you say to those people?
The big challenge that everyone's going through when they say, oh, that's a lot, they're listening to those names that I just read and talked about. And they're like, yeah, but that's Michael Jordan, that's Serena, that's Venus, Peekaboo Street. And then the next thing they do is the kiss of death. I can never be like them. You lie to yourself. You tell yourself something that you believe and you internalize it by how you talk to yourself. And I grew up, most people don't realize this, but my family born on an Indian reservation. I'm a member of the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Cree Indians, Anishinaabe. My name is Ozawamaka Indigo Ojibwe. And so I have a very different upbringing than how I might present myself to a lot of people. They go, oh, that guy looks like a suburban guy. They don't see what Bannon bread is and doing a sweat lodge and how we love sage and just, you know, all this other craziness that is in my upbringing that is very unique and I cherish it. But people, no matter where they're at, they will look at these things and they'll say, I never can do that. I might be, you know, in the projects, inner cities, and I can never, to make it to college is beyond me. I met this little boy, one of my good friends, he's another author, his name's Steve Pfeiffer. He was a headmaster of a school in Kenya. And he said that when students would do well, I wanted to give them a reward, something that said, great job. He gave them a pencil at the end of the year. Imagine getting A's on your report card and what you get at the end of the year is a pencil. Now, in the United States, you give a kid a pencil and the first thing they'll do is probably throw it on the ground or, you know, whatever, laugh at it. In Kenya, these children would take the pencil, hold it up like this was the Holy Grail. They'd look at it. They would dance. They were giddy. They would show their friends the pencil. They'd revere it and cherish it as if it were a bar of gold. And the unique thing about this is that their dreams, you know, even using a computer, one little boy said, I never had a dream so big as that. But when you set your sights and you tell yourself, you condition yourself, oh, I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't be like this person. Just realize all those people I mentioned, they all had humble beginnings. They all had challenges and obstacles they faced. And they broke through them because they could talk to themselves differently. And they learned not to talk to themselves down. They talked themselves up. And I give people some tips on how to do this. And it's actually the focus of a TED Talk that I'm going to do. And I can't wait to do it because it's a critical skill that no one's ever taught growing up. You learn how to speak, you learn your ABCs, you learn how to talk to, play nice to others, but you never learn how to be nice to yourself and talk to yourself.
How do you stay hungry for success after you've achieved so much?
There's so much that I want to do still. It's always great to have a bigger dream. You know, it's like the pencil or the computer. You know, I've never had a dream so big. Well, when you accomplish something and you reach your goal, you get a bigger goal. And it's great to look out there in the world of sales because there are people that I look at like Dan Loke, Grant Cardone. And I'm like, I want to be, I don't know about you, but I think Grant Cardone's airplane's pretty darn cool.
It's pretty bad.
I like his pad in Miami where it overlooks the ocean. And do I have a little, you know, envy there? Yeah, envy's good. You know, it drives you to have a chip on your shoulder and want more in your life. There's nothing wrong with wanting more. And I see also some things that are unique. I want more, not only for me, but I want more for the world. And that's what led me to write this book is we all sell, but do we all sell well? Do we all negotiate well? I want everyone. And it's so, I almost released this. This was supposed to be released in March of 2020. Guess what? I looked at COVID and like, there's no way I can do this. So I rewrote my book to reflect the reality of the COVID economy. And I had customers who were crying on the phone with me. And I said, how can I write something that's going to help everyone rebound in their own way? So right now, everyone, we're all trying to get the economy running. We're trying to get businesses successful, trying to be the best people we are. We're trying to provide for our families. Those are the people I want to help. And there's enough business for all of us. The rising tide raises all ships. We need the tide to rise a lot, you know, all over the world. And I'm encouraged hearing stories of people in faraway places who've had degrees of success like in Kenya, in Africa, and in different indigenous places throughout the world. It's great when you see people take an entrepreneurial spirit and they're really making a big impact and difference. And if there's a dream that I had in writing the book, I want people to have learned some things, apply them, and create their own success. What's cool is I've gotten fan mail from places like Russia, where somebody said, I read your book and it motivated me to start my own business. And here's what I'm doing. And I'm like blown away. Brazil, Australia, New Zealand, I've got these readers from all over the place that I never, ever in a million years imagined, but they're people who are creating their own success stories.
That's very, very cool. All right. I'm going to switch gears here a little bit and ask you about something that you talk about in the book, which are assertion and non-assertion signs. One of the things that piqued my interest in some of the notes that we have together is what is a non-assertion sign and what it should tell you in a negotiation. So what is a non-assertion sign?
We can all recognize non-assertion. And for sellers and negotiators, it's important to be able to read the room in a way. And so when I talked about Dean Barnlin and his six people in a negotiation, that's kind of the groundwork that you need to do. Because once you get in the negotiation, even if it's over Zoom or something, you're telling something to people and they will do the classic non-assertion sign where they're nodding. So nodding is a non-assertion sign. And you're like, well, I always thought nodding was just that they get what I'm putting down. And while that's true, it's very subtle in recognizing this because it's all about engagement. So like right now, you and I are, and you hear Chris Voss and other people talk about this of mirroring, you know, and you don't want to make mirroring hokey, you know, but you want people to be engaged. So when you're engaged in a conversation and you're nodding and I say, hey, Mark, what do you think? Turn it around. You're like, well, I thought that was a great point. And I can tell that you're engaged. But if you're describing something and you're saying, okay, for the next 3 years on this solution that we're delivering, we're expecting from the information that you shared with us that it's going to have this much of an impact on your business. And for that impact, we're willing to invest this much. Well, if I blew it and got it wrong, they might just be nodding all the way going, yep. But they're really, it's a non-assertion. They're saying, I'm disengaged. I'm plotting my next strategy with your competitor. And you can look around the room and see it. So it's important to pace yourself to know and have pre-planned questions to encourage engagement and clarity. So you can say, hey, let's take a time out. Is this going down the path that we intended to? Again, I'm focusing it back on them. And they're like, yeah, it is. Well, I see this puzzle look in your eyes, or I see you nodding. I just wanted to double check and make sure that this is resonating with you and we're hitting on things that you truly value. Just shut up. Listen. Listen to what they say. Encourage the no. You know, get the no out there. Get those objections. I almost think I'm an objection farmer when I'm in a negotiation because I want them to tell me everything that they hate about me, my company, the solution, how much they dislike about something. Because until I get those cues, you rarely have a mental concept of what's happening in that other person until you check point along the way.
I like that. This reminds me of a conversation that I had with a guy named Dr. Mark Goldston. Do you know his work at all?
Yes.
He wrote a book on listening, and I love his work. And so he talks about listening to someone and listening for something. And he has this checkpoint in a conversation that he would have because he's a therapist. He has this checkpoint that he has in his conversations with his patients where he would say, hey, I know that you're listening to me, but there's something that you're listening for that I've missed. I can tell based on how you're looking at me. So what have I missed here? And what are you listening for? And that forces people to be like, oh, okay, I was listening for this and that hasn't come up yet. And that's a great checkpoint to be able to say, okay, there's something here that we need to dig in on. And I love your take on it is like, look, something here is probably not resonating with you. I can tell based on your body language. So I want to stop here for a second and say, hey, what isn't resonating? And what were you listening for that doesn't make sense? I love that approach.
Yeah, that's a great point that he brings up of listening for. The other non-assertion sign that just came to me that you'll see sometimes in a negotiation is you'll see people moving their lips when you're talking. You ever seen that?
Yes.
And it drives me, well, I probably shouldn't say this on air, how crazy it drives me, but it drives me pure crazy, you know? But what happens in people's mind when they're doing that, I used to think that, oh, are they mirroring me and trying to pick out the next word that I'm saying? Some people do that. Most people are actually mouthing the thing that they're about to say.
Interesting.
And they're You can tell by the way they purse their lips or do things, and they're about to say something. And whenever I see someone do this, I'm like, oh, I missed what you said. And it's really important. What'd you just say? You know, what's the point you were bringing up? And I give them the time and space. But there are times when you're presenting or sharing something and you notice this, you'll have the head nod and you'll be like, oh, that person is involved in meta communication with themselves about what they're going to say next. To whenever you encounter these things, just stop.
Yeah, because they're not listening to you. They're thinking about the next question that they're going to ask you.
Right. The next question they're going to ask, how to refute it, some zinger they want to throw you. And I teach all my sellers this. This is one of my basic secrets. This is my free secret I give to everyone. People are so much in sales conditioned to be Johnny, you know, or Susie on the spot. When the customer asks them a question, it's okay for them to go, And this is another thing that I do in negotiation. If somebody says something crazy, I'll respond back to them and say, so you actually want a 35% discount and that's fair? Am I hearing you correctly? And when they hear their own words back, they'll go, no, that's not what I said. All you're doing is repeating it back to them. But a lot of times we're not conditioned to ask these clarifying questions, or they'll say, hey, can your solution do this? Tell me why that's important to you. You know, I'm not trying to be a smartass. I'm just, what benefit does that bring to you? Help me understand the impact for you. And if you're really curious and honest, they're going to tell you. You're going to learn something new.
I love that approach. The other thing that you spoke about in the form that we have going back and forth is when someone escalates or throws assertions at you and your company, and how that's a golden opportunity to use strategic empathy to understand them better. We kind of talked around that in the last right. few paragraphs, but I want to think about if I was giving you all the signals of like, okay, I'm interested, like, let's move forward. You know, I basically got my wallet out. What would you do as a next step to use empathy to dig deeper?
A lot of people in a negotiation, even for the deal, they're thinking about the deal. And this is like the quota. I challenge everyone to think about what's the payoff for the other person, you know, and a lot of times it's not the contract. They're thinking, oh no, now we have to implement this solution, or we have to realize the benefit of this solution that's providing for us. And that might be a whole nother thing. So as you're going through your negotiation and you're like at your little checklist, you're like, okay, I'm winning here. Stop for a second and ask yourself, you know, hey, I think we've come a long way today. I like where we're at, but there's still a lot more to do. And put yourself in that perceptual position of they're trying to figure out how to implement this or realize the value, and let them know the things that you're going to do to be there with them for that. Oh, so I always tell people, you sell through the close. You think about whatever your win is and you sell through it and bust through to what their win is. And you sell through the close to that endpoint. And you think about literally, hey, what's it going to be like to pop the champagne once they've realized the value, once they do the case study, once they're ready to stand up and be referenceable, what's that payoff? And if you put yourself there in the negotiation, that's like, you get to that point, you know, everyone says, you know, hey, we've gotten to the point and you've sold the deal, stop selling. True to a certain point. Make sure you've sold through to the thing that they value.
Love that. Because for the procurement people listening, this is a tip for you as well as the salespeople that are also listening. The salespeople, their win is the contract signature, basically. Awesome. We've got the signature. I got a deal. Fantastic. But the win for the business people, not just the procurement people, but the business people who are implementing something, is full implementation. That's the win, right? Full implementation, right. And we've done our job, right? Not only did we source and secure the product, but we've now implemented and we've gone through the change management process of that. So that is the win for them. And I love the idea of selling through the close to where the win is for the customer. That's brilliant. Very, very, very cool.
Procurement people out there too, their win might be the end of year bonus for them. And I've always been fascinated, you know, the questions that people don't ask, but maybe I'm just dumb and, you know, I'm not following protocol or whatever, but I'm like, how do you get paid? You know, when we close this deal and, you know, what's the payoff for you? They tell me, they'll be like, well, I'm bonused on how much, you know, cost savings I drive over this or this percentage, or, you know, on the total contract value, if I can drive this much savings. And then I'll just ask questions. Well, how do you do that when the products are changing or when the environment changes? What type of info do you need to provide back for your business case and justification? Again, these are the questions my competitors don't ask, but now they're probably going to. But
you just screwed yourself, Joe.
I know, but you know what? It's all about being there, and you know, people buy from people, and don't listen to anything that anyone tells you or says, and just go, that's the secret formula. I'm going to copy it down and follow this verbatim. This Joe guy, I'm going to do exactly what he says. You have to internalize it, make it yours, make it real for you. And don't be, I love Ted Lasso. I got my little like believe sign down there in the back, but don't be a Ted Lasso if that's not who you are. Be comfortable in your own skin, develop your own way of thinking about things, your own approach, your own words, and that's going to work for you.
Outstanding. Joe, this has been a fantastic conversation, and I have personally learned a lot from this. I'm sure our listeners have too. They're likely going to want to follow you online and figure out where they can pick up this book. So how do they do that?
So online, it's really easy. You know, my name is Joe Paronto, easiest name to spell. So that's why I made it to our www.thejpar, the J-P-A-R. And on social media, you can find me pretty much anywhere, you know, LinkedIn. And if you're looking for the book is called Billion Dollar Sales Secrets. You can go to BillionDollarSalesSecrets.com. You can order a copy there. But I'll be honest, the half-priced books, Amazon, Walmart, Target, around the world, there's different bookstores. You can find it online pretty much most places, and they have good rates, good shipping, stuff that I can't touch. So if you buy a book through those venues, one of the things that I'm doing, and it's available on my website at BillionDollarSalesSecrets.com, you'll see it coming up this weekend, is I'm sharing free book plates. And a book plate is, I will sign the book plate. You can stick it in there. I've got acid-free paper and different glue strips that you can put in the book. And that way everyone can have a signed copy of their book from me, and I'll personalize it for whatever you're going through in life. I love the interaction. So reach out to me at thejpar.com, at BillionDollarSalesSecrets.com directly. Follow me on social media. I love to email and talk to people, hear your stories, because it's all about you. I want you to have the payback and the benefit from whatever learning you're engaged in, and I'll keep you up to date on cool stuff.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing your wisdom today, Joe. I appreciate you being here.
Well, I really appreciate all your listeners. You know, I picture you driving around, doing housework, clued into something, and taking that moment to sharpen your saw and get better. Thanks for inviting me into your homes, your cars, your life. I really appreciate you, and I wish you nothing but the most success, happiness, and good health. So blessings to all of you.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.